Get a job.
Work hard.
And one day you can retire and do the things you want.
That's the typical formula for daily life in the modern world.
And it works for lots of people. This kind of life is perfect.
But it's not for us. And I'm guessing that it's not for you either.
I'm David Allan Patali.
And I'm Carmen Allan Patali. And together we run the content company Red Platypus.
I'm also a published fiction author.
And we have two young daughters who keep us on our toes.
We've both said no to well-paid jobs in favour of pursuing our creative paths. And we want to walk them with you.
Freelancer, digital nomad, artist, creative, self-employed. Whatever you want to call it, if you work for yourself and want to keep it that way, or want to be free from the 9 to 5 and don't know where to start, we want to help.
We're going on a journey to speak to committed creatives, people who are all in, who have made highly successful businesses out of their creativity, and ask them how they do it while retaining the magic.
Because while we think inspiration is good, we've come to learn that process is vital.
Welcome to the Committed Creative Podcast, your toolkit for the creative life you want.
Here's to going all in and becoming a committed creative. This week on the Committed Creative Podcast, I speak with Kate De Jong. Kate is a business and marketing strategy coach for business owners who want meaning, results, and impact, minus the struggle. After losing two pregnancies, Kate realized something needed to change in the way she was living her life about a decade ago. Her high stress was impacting her lifestyle, and so she decided to quit her high-powered engineering job and follow her true passions. In this podcast today, we chat about Kate's career journey, how she felt she should be an engineer because she was simply good at maths and science, even though she wasn't actually that passionate about engineering. Why you should focus on your natural gifts, because this is often where your passions lie and where your joy comes from. How to encourage your own children to follow their own dreams. How to uncover your zone of genius and take the leap from full-time employment to self-employment. And many more other topics about following your dreams. So without further ado, let's jump into the pod. Well, hi, Kate, and welcome to the Committed Creative Podcast. I'm so happy that you could join us today.
Thank you, Carmen. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome. So to kick us off, perhaps you could tell everyone who doesn't already know you what it is you do and what business you run.
Mm-hmm. So I run my own business called Inspired Business, and I help small business owners grow with ease. My tagline is more flow, less hustle, because I'm sure all of those in small business know that you can fall into a lot of hustle pretty quickly and burn out, which... Yeah, it's a constant challenge for me and everyone that I coach. So, yeah, business and marketing strategist for small business. So I stepped out and started my own business in 2012, quit my engineering career of 15 years and decided I'd had enough. I wasn't working in my zone of genius. It wasn't making me happy, and thought I'll do my own thing. And as we all do, we go through the entrepreneurial journey of failure, success, more failure, you know.
Yeah, total roller coaster.
Yeah.
So your background is in engineering, which is quite interesting to me, because a lot of business coaches I've spoken to in the past, you know, their backgrounds is in comms or teaching, mm-hmm. or one of those kind of what I guess people think of as more creative fields. But, mm-hmm. you know, you come from a science engineering background. What made you want to jump into business coaching? What's the story there behind that?
Yeah, well, I didn't intend to end up as a business coach. That was never sort of my, chosen path. But I always knew as an engineer I was a square peg in a round hole. I probably chose the career path for all the wrong reasons. In fact, I've written a book about it, because it was a very long traumatic journey. of more than 15 years of knowing that I was on the wrong path, but feeling like I was trapped by my choices, by societal expectations, by family, all that kind of thing. And my body was trying to give me the signs early on through fatigue, which turned into more serious fatigue, which turned into chronic illnesses. And, you know, all the red flags and the signs were there, but I think we're so conditioned to ignore them and push through, aren't we, especially my generation. And so it ended up in sort of our fertility journey was what really brought everything to a head. We lost two babies back to back in my mid-30s, and that was sort of the sledgehammer that came out and was like, right, whatever you're doing is not working, you need to stop, you know. So that was sort of the dark night of the soul that I write about in my book, because I think so many of us are so disconnected from our truth or our desires, and we think we can't have what we want, or, you know, it's not possible to have what we want. So yeah, that was really the turning or the wake-up call for me to really take a good look at myself and what I was, you know, the choices I'd made and where they'd led me, and choose something different. So when I quit in my mid-30s, which is 10 years, it's 10 years ago this year that I quit my engineering career.
Wow.
And yeah, a lot's happened in that time, but it took me a long time to figure out who am I, what do I want to do. I went through a huge identity crisis, you know, just not knowing if I'm not that, then what am I?
Mm.
Yeah, so it was sort of a journey of a couple of, at that time, thankfully we did, as soon as I quit my engineering career, I fell pregnant and I carried my baby boy Jack to term, no problems.
Aww.
So it was like this also confirmation from my body that, you know, when you choose for yourself and your truth, then it, you know, your body responds. Mm. It's such a psychosomatic link, I think, between your emotions and your physical health, which is what I discovered.
Mm. While you were saying that, I was just thinking, you know, so many professional women, they almost like, I'm not saying this is what you did, but I know I did in my mind in some way that, you know, I'm going to get married at this age, I'm going to have a career by, and it's going to be at this stage by this age, and then I'm going to have a baby at this age. And when, you know, it doesn't all go to plan, it can, you can just fall in a heap because you just feel like you're falling behind in life and it's very stressful. Mm-hmm. And fertility, I think, is one of those things that you can't really control. I mean, and so many professional women feel like it's an element of their life that is just out of control, and can relate to that.
Yeah, everything else, yes, can you? Yeah.
Yeah.
So many people can, right? And everything else in your life, you just, yeah, you set a goal and you achieve it. You work hard, you get the result, you know, and you can't do that when it comes to your emotional, physical health. And, yeah, the pregnancy is a huge wake-up call for a lot of women, I think, isn't it, that you can't control. It's a real lesson in surrender and trusting, or, yeah, it's huge, isn't it?
Mm. I know that both times that we've fallen pregnant, it's been when we've been traveling and relaxed.
Yeah. Hey. That's right.
So do you think that that conditioning of what your career and future should be happens the early days in school? Because I know personally, like, I went to quite a prestigious school, and almost not doing TEE as it was back then, now it's ATAR, but that wasn't even really an option at my school. Like, everyone did their TEE. Do you think that that's something that's conditioned to us from a young age, and rather than asking what are your passions and what do you love to do, people ask, who do you want to be? But maybe they should be going back to what your passions, where your passions lie.
Yeah, I mean, if we ask kids, instead of saying, what do you want to be, if we ask them, what do you really enjoy? Like, what a different question, isn't it? And what a different permission almost, because, yeah, I mean, I was good at maths and science, but only because I knew that my father valued those. He was a mechanical engineer, and he was really, like, pushed me in those subjects and made me do all the extracurricular stuff, you know. And so I got good grades, but only because I learned at a young age to become an overachiever to get the validation that I wanted. And so I did really well because I worked hard, but the things that came naturally to me that I loved was writing, languages, all the creative stuff, you know, and art. And I was really good at art, but I gave it up in year 10 because it wasn't going to contribute to my ATAR score.
Yeah.
So, and my art teacher is the father of a good friend of mine, and he, you know, he says, you were the one that got away, you know, because you could have been a great creative or artist. And that just, I had a lot of grief for a lot of years about the choices I'd made, a lot of sadness. I even get a bit emotional now thinking about what could have been. if someone had, because I went to see career counselors and they all say, they look at your grades and they say, oh, you're good at math, science, you know, writing is not considered to be, well, it wasn't when I was in school, to be something you should pursue as a career. You know, English literature, I got great score on that without even trying. Same with Italian. The subjects that I did really well in without studying, like surely, you know, now I hope that teachers see that as your true gifts. Like if you can excel in something with minimum effort, that's your natural gift. And that's where you should focus your career path, because when something comes easily and you're really good at it without really trying, then that's where the joy and the passion comes in, because you become so masterful at something, don't you, that it's sort of is this upward spiral of positivity. Whereas in my case it was the opposite. I had to work really hard as an engineer, and I also felt like a fraud because I knew I wasn't wired like everybody else. And so I worked really, really hard, hoping that people wouldn't, see that I wasn't actually, you know, a proper engineer. And then the harder you work, the tighter you get, because you're not getting that positive feedback loop that you do when you're engaged with something you love and it's joyful. That feeds your energy, whereas when you're really slogging hard at something that's not in your zone of genius, it leaks your energy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, and that becomes a downward spiral, and there's no good ending to that story, you know, when you're pushing yourself to do those things that aren't joyful and they're not in your zone of genius. Yeah.
And I mean, your dad probably had the best of intentions encouraging you to go into engineering.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. As a parent, how can we encourage our children to follow their passions? Because sometimes, I mean, personally for me, I remember telling my dad that I wanted to be an actress when I was like 9 or something. And he was like, only 1 in 10 million ever make good money. And
it's crush not- those dreams, you know. Yeah,
I was probably excited when I said I wanted to be a journalist, because that was probably
more chance of making money in their mind. Yeah.
So how can we encourage our children to, you know, hold back on what we want for them and rather allow them to be what they want to be?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it was really hard for my dad to read my book, I think, and for my mum, because they did have such good intentions, but they can also recognize now that it possibly wasn't the right way. But we all do the best we can in every moment, don't we? And I think that's what we're realizing now. So with my children, I know what you're saying, it's a very fine line between allowing them the space to just focus on what they love and enjoy, but at the same time stretching and pushing yourself so you maximize your potential, isn't it? So, I mean, I know of one family and they're very much about, oh, if you don't like it, don't do it. But I don't think that serves you in the long term either, because I'm actually really grateful now that I did engineering, because the way it's shaped my mind and my thought processes, you know, I'm sharper, my brain is stronger for it. So there's definitely benefits in pushing yourselves in ways that are uncomfortable. I just think, though, there's kind of like an 80-20 rule maybe, or that if you're not loving what you're doing at 80% of the time, then probably not, you know. Yeah, so I'm struggling with that too. My son's 10 and 7 now, so how to not let them slack off and be lazy.
but still develop themselves. Yeah, it is a fine balance in some ways, because obviously doing the hard stuff is what builds your resilience as well. So you do want to be doing hard things and challenging yourself. Someone told me recently that there's her daughter's high school, for sports day, you don't have to participate. You just go up to the board and write down what, if you want to race in something, you can just put your name down, but it's not compulsory. And because, you know, not everyone thinks it's cool these days to do sport. I just thought, I don't know, part of me thought that was a bit sad, because I feel like, you know, it's good to get out of your comfort zone and do things and be pushed. And
yeah, I mean, my son gets diarrhea before a race because he's so nervous, you know. And I've tried, no matter what I say to him around, the result doesn't matter. It's about it doesn't change. And each child is so different, I'm noticing as well. Like he's wired for competition, so he has to win, you know.
My daughter's the same.
Oh, yeah. And that puts so much internal stress on them. But at the same time, it is good for them because resilience is something, as hard as it is to develop resilience, it's necessary. So tough love is, you know, it's a fine balance, isn't it? But definitely resilience is key.
Yeah. You need to learn to lose, I think, as well. And I mean, especially if you're running your own business, it's so important to learn to lose because that's how you grow.
Exactly.
Yeah. So tell me about some of the clients that you work with. Do they come from science backgrounds or are they?
Would you believe very few do? And I've had very few, that have actually come from engineering. That if they have, they tend to go on and be freelancers or consultants rather than doing something completely different. I think I'm quite rare in that sense.
Yeah.
But I've had a lot of people say working on the inside side of organizations, whether it's in HR or psychology or professional services of some kind, stepping out and becoming a free agent and doing that job as their own business. So that's quite common. But I have had lots and lots of clients that it's a complete pivot. So one girl worked in the ABC children's, you know, television, and now is a personal stylist and home styling, home interiors. So, yeah, that's a good example. I've had a musician who's turned into an energy healer and she's incredible. Another lady who was in document control. Actually, I've had two document controllers, interestingly. One's gone on to become a 6 times published book author, and now she coaches others to write books. To go from document, like me, she chose that career for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And her writing was sort of her secret outlet. And now she goes on, now she helps other people write their stories. And another document controller, which couldn't be more left brain, right?
Yeah.
Now running an entertainment company in burlesque and cabaret. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so it really, like, that's what I love about what I do now is the variety, and I think that's what I craved in my engineering career was that spontaneity, freedom, flexibility, variety. And I've come to realise now that, you know, the typical profile of someone who's well-suited to engineering is not me, you know, that there's we all have different personality and natural sort of tendencies, I suppose. And so the presentation I'm giving at the Women in Technology conference in next month is all about finding your zone of genius and knowing what those strengths are so that you can intentionally mold your career around it or have conversations with management or, you know, and really fight to be put in roles where you can thrive and really be fully in your zone of genius rather than, you know, yeah, not.
So, and how can people find their zone of genius? Because, you know, so many people say, oh, I don't have any hobbies. I don't really know what I like. And in their spare time, they maybe just watch TV or read a book. And how can you just uncover those passions?
There's lots of different ways. But my favourite way potentially is, you know, there's so many different personality coding methodologies out there. But my favourite one that I have found most powerful for finding your zone of genius is called Bank methodology, B-A-N-K, and that stands for the 4 different predominant types, which stems back from Hippocrates when he sort of said there's 4 different kinds of human beings, and everything sort of in modern psychology has developed from that, like Myers-Briggs, they all stem from that system. But yeah, the 4 types blueprint, they love system structure, stability, low risk. They're very much in, they call them in the box.
You've got the
that's not you.
I'm just like, oh no, I'm as far from that as you get.
Exactly. So you might be action, which is what they call out of the box, which is freedom, spontaneity, creativity, action, winning, competition, stimulation. You know, you might have some of that. The next type is nurturer. They're all about relationships, authenticity, connection, purpose, giving, service, you know, all that kind of human qualities. And then you've got the knowledge people, which are all about the intellectual substance, the science, the analysis, the data, the universal truths, scientific laws, that kind of thing. And I was naturally drawn to the knowledge. That's why I did enjoy engineering at first. But engineers are typically blueprint knowledge together. So, you know, the system, structure, stability, all of that. And that was not me. I was very much nurture, action, and knowledge. And so that's why it was a complete mismatch for me in engineering. And so knowing what your, what they call bank code is, the order in which those things are, and then you can look at careers that are a complete fit for that type. And that's really possible. And that's what I help a lot of clients do. I've got a session with a girl after this, actually quitting her corporate career, trying to figure out where do I go from here. And so that's one way of looking at it. But it comes down to just the things that you do naturally well without trying. And there's tables and things you can go through and just tick off, yep, I'm good at that. No, I'm not good at that. And so that's how I help clients, just with a number of different worksheets and questionnaires and things, to really get a handle on their zone of genius.
So once they uncover this zone of genius, what should they do next? Like, for example, that woman that you're coaching after this call, how does she make the transition? Like, because it can be quite frightening. And a lot of people I've actually interviewed for this podcast, they were made redundant, and that is what forced them into their creative career, because they kind of had no other option at that point. But if you want to make the break, you know, on your own without a push, what can kind of give you the courage to do so?
Good question. Yeah, I think most of us are pushed into it. But, I mean, probably at least half of the clients that I work with, they wanted to step out on their own. And that's why I do what I do, because I found, you know, I found the business building journey took longer and was more expensive and was more difficult than it could have been if I'd had the right guidance and the right, you know, if I knew what to do at what stage. And I think, like everything, knowledge is everything, isn't it? It's like understanding what are the phases of business growth. What do I have to do in phase one, the launch phase? What do I have to do in phase two? And I think the biggest challenge for business owners is the shiny object syndrome. We're bombarded by Facebook ads, by everything saying you need this. This is the magic bullet. If you're not doing this, you know. And like most people I coach, I signed up for every course under the sun in the beginning. I had information overwhelm, and then I just was so confused. I didn't know what to do and when, and I tried stuff and it didn't work, or I spent lots of money on websites and things that, you know, wasn't needed. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's just stripping it right back and saying, okay, where are you now? What's the next milestone to succeed as a business owner? So I call it the valley of death, you know, between where you launch and then where that period where you're putting money and time into the business, but you're not seeing any revenue yet. Yeah, that's where the 85 to 90% of small businesses fail in the first 3 years. Getting through that is like the most critical. And that's what I'm passionate about, is helping businesses get to the other side so that they are established and have profitable, reproducible income. And then you can grow from there. And then it becomes about growth and scale. But the first essential thing is getting through to the other side of that valley and really establishing yourself firmly. So that's what I do, is help people through that. So to your question, how do you have the courage? I think courage comes through knowing probably that you are doing the right things, that you've got the right support, and just making sure that you are doing the right things at the right time, because we all know cash flow is what kills any business, isn't it? And just making sure that whatever cash you have in the business, you're using it on the things that are going to return, you know, the deliver that return on investment as quickly as possible. The right things at the right time is what it comes down to. And yeah, just, it's also just having a really simple, clear message as well, I think, which a lot of businesses struggle with.
Yeah.
And I find that with most of the work that I do, if I look at what I do day to day, a lot of it is around helping clients just get their messaging right or clear.
Yeah,
and it's amazing at networking events, you know, when you stand up and everyone does their pitch, and after they've done their thing, you're like, still don't really know what you do. So just helping people, because we know what we do, but articulating in a way that others understand, and it's an easy, simple message to digest, that, you know, you can immediately say, right, yes, I know someone who needs that, you know. Yeah.
It's also, so I don't know, if like when you're starting out, you just say yes to everything, and sometimes that message can be a bit diluted because you're doing all the things just to earn a buck, and, you know, so many coaches say it's really important to niche down because that way you can get the work that you want and it's specific. But mm-hmm. at the same time, that can be quite frightening because you feel like you're saying no to people. Mm-hmm. And when you're starting out, that is potentially fit. Well, it feels like you're saying no to income. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts around that?
It's a good point. And I think niching happens by itself over time when you start to get really clear and you start noticing where your joy is and where the and then you just consciously choose to take more and more of those clients on and say no to the others. But it's like you say, it's you can't always do that in the startup phase. And I do believe in those first early years, you do need to say yes to everything. Just, you know, you have, because you don't know what your niche is until you've tried a bunch of stuff as well. And which clients are getting the most value. And it's that feedback loop you need constantly in business. So if you're just sitting back and waiting for the right clients, then I think that's a mistake. So I agree with you.
And for me personally, I know when I started out, I was scared to actually, I know you said you did all the courses and everything. I was actually just too scared to spend money elsewhere and try to teach myself everything. And that just ended up taking so much longer. But at the same time, when I start investing in coaching and programs, I wasted a lot of money on the wrong types of coaching. And do you have any pointers for trying to choose a coach that like aligns with what it is you're trying to achieve and someone who's actually going to help you grow and is actively engaged in your business's journey?
Good question. How do you choose? I mean, I think you have to firstly make sure their track record, you know, that you can visibly see that they have done what you need to do and where you need to be, that because there's a lot of well-intended coaches out there who haven't actually, you know, it's the blind leading the blind in some way. So just checking firstly that whatever your goal is, that coach has been there, done that and done it well. I wrote an ebook called The Art of Business Building and I break down the business building journey into five distinct sections. And it's all about stage specific strategies. So if you're in startup, don't hire a coach that's focusing on growth and scale, you know, because that's not going to serve you. Or if you're in growth and scale, don't hire a coach that's predominantly worked with startup. Do you know, it's whatever stage of business you're in. So in this ebook, I outline, if you're in startup, just do this. Don't worry about anything else. Just get this stuff done. Then when you're in the build phase, don't worry about anything else. Just get this stuff done. Then when you're in break-even profit, this set of activities is what you do. Then it's this set of activities. And so just making sure whichever coach you take on, they're experienced in that stage of growth because it's different. And I think that's the key thing most business owners don't appreciate is how different those strategies are in each phase of the journey. And most coaches say, oh, I can help you any phase of the journey. Whereas, you know, I'll be the first to say I can definitely help you through startup, build, profit. I myself am personally working on growth and scale right now. Am I in a position to teach you and tell you the best advice? Probably not, because I haven't proven it myself yet. Do you know what I mean?
No, that's so great honesty though, because some coaches I feel like promise the world and then there's nothing more disappointing when they can't help you out.
I was just going to say that's the I hear what you're saying, and that dishonesty is what takes people down, I think.
Especially when you're starting out, you don't really have that much money to invest, and if you're the wrong person, it can be a bit soul-destroying almost.
Yeah. Oh, and the number of clients that get coming to me that have spent 20 grand on very well-known coaches and they haven't got anywhere, you know, and then they do a few sessions with me and they're like, I've had more value with you than I did out of that whole 20K. And I just think that's really not fair. That's not just, is it? Like, I mean, sure, I'd love to be charging 20 grand, but it's not. I know the cash flow situation of startups or people who are trying to, and so you've also got to honor that. You can't ethically take 20. It's just, you know, whole ethical question across the coaching industry is something that makes, and it's the same with digital marketing agencies. I have the same bee in my bonnet about them, you know, happily take 2 to 5K a month on digital marketing campaigns that may or may not deliver results. And I feel like those agencies need to stick in their lane, which is SMEs, small to medium enterprises, and leave the poor little business startup solopreneurs alone, because they can't afford that cash flow and they can't promise them those results. They don't get the results. But the number of clients that come to me that have been cleaned out financially by digital marketers or coaches that have promised the world. And, you know, that's enough to send someone back to a job, isn't it? Because you then lose all confidence. You haven't actually got the capital funds to build your business. So, yeah, I'm passionate about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you, I've been burned, and it's my passion is to help people get through with as much resilience and cash flow as possible, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah. And
do you find that there's a common problem that people get stuck on in the startup phase of the journey?
Well, messaging is definitely a big one. I think a lot of times people spend a lot of time and money on branding and website and all that kind of thing before you've gone out and tested the market, before you've got that feedback from customers. And as you know, your message and your services evolve over time. So I always think keep it as light as possible, keep it as simple and flexible as possible in the beginning, have some core offerings that you really outline clearly somewhere. Doesn't need to be a fancy website, could just be a one page, you know, start simple, get the clients, learn how to speak in results-based language. If I'm going to say the biggest trap that I find most business owners fall into, it's selling the how, not the end result. So they tell you about this amazing process they have or this, you know, offering, but then it's like, what's the transformation? That's what people buy and want. It's like, where are you now and where do you want to be, and how do you bridge that? How do you not, that's what you're selling to people, is the end result.
Yes.
So if you can clearly define, after working with me you will then it's clear to people what you do and how you can help them, and they're willing to pay for that. So go out to market with a very simple transformation, I call it. What's the offering, that what's the transformation you give your clients? Get a few clients who need that, get the feedback from those clients, tweak your processes, whatever, and then build from there. So yeah, not spending all your money up front on expensive branding or websites or programs. I get people coming to me that have invested in some online course hosting platform with all the bells and whistles that they really don't need right now.
No.
Or CRMs that do all these things that they don't need right now, like, you know. So I think getting a clear message, learning to talk in results-based language, that's the number one thing that I find I'm teaching people all the time.
Mm.
How do you say what you do in results-based language? And that really is a game changer.
That's such good advice. Recently I had Megan Cronje on the podcast, and she's a product photographer, and she was saying how she doesn't just sell photos, she sells, you know, the opportunity to make more sales to customers because of her photos. And she sells social media ideas and plans because of the photos that she produces. And yeah, she does that really well.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other examples, do you think, of results-based messaging?
Yeah, okay. Well, I can give an example of a consulting coaching training company that I was helping.
Okay.
And at the moment, their website talks all about how they have state-of-the-art coaching training programs and, all this language around, but you read it and you're like, what is it? What are you selling me? What is it?
Yeah.
You know? And so I helped them get really clear on, and they hadn't even realized this themselves, but I said to them, okay, so let's look at all this. It looks like you help with recruitment, you help with team culture and team building, you help with leadership development, and those are the three things, I think. And then in each of those areas, so in recruitment, you help reduce the recruitment time, you help choose the right candidate, and you get greater retention of that candidate and long-term employeeship. And they were like, yeah, that's what we do. Okay, great. in team culture, what do you do? Well, we work with them and we do, okay, but what's the end result? Well, they get along. They have. So in the end, we had a simple message for each one. For the teams, it was creating thriving team, creating thriving workplace, healthy, thriving workplaces, something like that. But it really is that simple.
Yeah.
And this person was like, oh, yeah, that's what we do. And
yeah.
So it's not the training program you sell or the this or the how or the what or the assessment mechanism you have. No one cares. What can you do? What's the result? Like your photographer, what she sells is increased revenue in your business through good product images and social media images, stuff that converts, you know. So that's the result, and people can find themselves in the result, and if they can make an emotional connection to that result, then the selling is so much easier. So there's only one reason why people never, well, the reasons why people don't buy is they're confused. They don't understand what you're selling.
Yeah.
They don't value it. Or it's not the right time, you know. So you've got to make all those things
align.
Yeah. And you have to be so clear in your messaging.
Yeah.
So
true.
And
so what do you feel are the results that you get for your clients when they work with you while we're on the topic?
Okay. So usually it's because I get business owners on different stages of the business journey. So in startup, it's clarity around who they are, what their offerings are, clear messaging across their website, their socials, their first service packages clearly defined and ready for, you know, so they can go out and start marketing, selling them. It's having that clear pathway to revenue generation. For the next stage, it's building on the revenue generation through marketing strategy or advertising sometimes. But the result always is around increased revenue, increased profit, because we all know that revenue doesn't always equal profit. And impact. So most of the people I work with are purpose driven. So it's around how do I get my message out to more people? And it all comes down in business, doesn't it, to making more money so you can grow, so you can make a bigger impact. So a lot of business owners I work with have a bit of an issue with making lots of money because they feel like it's, I don't know, not ethical or something, but it's like, but if you, the total mindset thing, and if you're playing small, who are you helping, you know, whereas if you play a big game, the reason Bill Gates is so powerful is because he can give back so much to society through his philanthropy and so on. So the more you make, the bigger impact you can have, the bigger difference you can make. So yeah, there really is no reason why you shouldn't make lots of money and enjoy life and give back and be of service, and it's all good.
So true. Is that something that you've had to overcome since
starting business? Yeah, because it felt too easy in the beginning. I thought, gosh, this coaching thing feels really easy, so therefore can't be very valuable, you know.
It's so true, isn't it? And sometimes like what feels obvious to you, like especially like when it comes to writing and helping, like a lot of the work that I do helps clients with their messaging as well. So I'm writing the words. Sometimes I'm like, this feels really obvious to me, but it's so valuable to them. And then you know, they haven't been working in this space, so they, you know, you're offering something completely new to them, but for you it feels
easy.
Yeah. And then you start feeling, oh, should I be charging for this? Like, this seems so simple. Yes. But
so true. And we all go through that. I did. And so, to be honest, I still do sometimes if I'm reassessing pricing or but I think it's really understanding and owning your gift. So for you, it's words and messaging and helping clients find the words. And that's such a struggle for so many people. So there's absolute value in that. And each one of us has a gift. And that's my belief that it's the famous Picasso saying, your job is to find your gift, your purpose is to give it away, something like that.
Yeah, it's true. And speaking of finding the words, having written this book, what prompted you to write the book? Was it just something that you feel that you had to tell, the story you had to tell?
Yeah. I knew that I wasn't the only one that had struggled with this, and that I feel really passionate about helping young people not make the same not make the same mistakes I did. And it took me 15 years and a lot of pain and sadness and trauma that was unnecessary. So I guess I just really wanted to, my dream in writing the book was for women my age to give it to their daughters and their sons to read. And that's what's been happening, I've noticed. And yeah, so I think it's a good book to read when you're around 16, 17, 18 years old. And just to, these are the consequences of not being true to yourself, you know. So there's always two things you can choose. You can be true to those around you, you know, as in you can do what you think or feel others expect or want you to do at the cost of yourself, your own happiness, or you can choose your own truth at the potential cost of disappointing or upsetting those around you. And it takes courage to do that. But, yeah, the consequences of not doing that are pretty severe. So at all times you have to choose to be true to yourself and suffer the discomfort of upsetting other people, or because at the end of the day it's your life. You know, you're the one that has to live with the decisions you make. So while there might be someone who's really upset with your decision to become, you know, an actress instead of an engineer, you know, well, that's their problem. They'll get over it eventually. But at least in the meantime, you're living your truth and doing what you know is right for you. And it might not end up being the right decision, but at least you've done it because you've followed your intuition and your what your heart's saying.
And it's making you happy as well. Because at the end of the day, it is about happiness as well. If you're in a job you hate, there's nothing more miserable, to be frank.
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah.
I know that experience very well. It's just soul destroying, and it affects everything. You know, it affects your relationships, because when you're not feeling happy in yourself, you just, you're not a pleasant person, you know, within or without. You know, you might try, but it's, it's not good. It's not good to be miserable in your job.
No, it's not. So if there's someone who's listening to this podcast right now, perhaps you could finish on by just saying, if they're feeling miserable in their job and, you know, perhaps they're having regret on the career path that they've chosen, what kind of advice would you give them in terms of next steps to take to find, you know, a fulfilling pathway, I suppose?
Yeah. It's really hard because I understand the, you know, the golden handcuffs or the financial commitments we all have, and it's not an easy decision to step away or do something else. But yeah, I think if you know internally that there's something else you should or could be doing that would make you happier, I think you owe it to yourself to explore that and at least put some concrete actions in place to just explore. You don't have to make any commitments, but you can go and chat with people. Like, say there's a, you're in a career and you feel like you want to be doing something different, go and chat to someone in that field, and you know, there's ways of doing it without jumping ship and making a massive career move. But yeah, and I think your answers come in the quiet time as well. So you've got to make space in your life for quiet. And, you know, as soon as it's, you're alone in the house, don't put Netflix on, but just go for a walk or sit with yourself and really get comfortable with silence, because that's when the intuitive knowing comes in.
Yes.
So really making time to connect with your intuition, because it always knows. So, and your body's always giving you feedback. So that mindfulness, I think, and that silence, the contemplation, the allowing, and even just starting with the question, please show me what, you know, my next steps, can be really powerful, because then your subconscious mind goes to work and you see a book that you should read, or you meet, you have a conversation with someone that leads to something else. But yeah, I guess just giving yourself permission to explore and, you know, have the space. And yeah, if there's a way to take those first steps, maybe it is just talking to someone who's been there, and, you know, but yeah, you will know, I think, intuitively, if you give yourself that space, what you need to do next. So I just say go within and listen and follow the guidance that comes to you internally. That'd be my advice.
And that's great advice. Thanks so much, Kate. I really enjoyed our chat today.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, thank you, Carolyn.
Really insightful.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Kate was so inspirational, wasn't she? Now, if you want to find out more about Kate, you can follow her on Instagram at katedejong.inspiredbusiness or check out her website at katiedejong.com. That's katiedejong.com. Until next time, here's to going all in on your creative pursuits.
Thank you for listening to the Committed Creative Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode and learned at least one thing that will help you stay on the creative path.
If you liked it, please subscribe as there's plenty more to come. And we'd love it if you could leave us a review if you found the podcast worthwhile. And if you didn't, please send us your feedback. We're all ears. You can check us out online at redplatypuscreative.com or follow us on Facebook and Instagram at redplatypuscreative.
Remember, you are not alone in your creativity and you can make money from your creative pursuits. See you next time when we speak to another creative mind that's committed to making their way work.
Here's to going all in and becoming a committed creative.